Hello, I'm Issa Wellen, and this is Issa Wellen Writes Stories for Adults. Today, my guest is Samantha, and we're going to talk about, what are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about all the words. We're going to talk about what she writes and her journey and what she's doing now and where she's planning to go. We're talking to, and she writes mystery. So that's really cool to me because there's some work that goes into that that doesn't go into, like, it's nothing like what I write. So I'm so happy you guys are here today. And then my music doesn't fade out. And there, I have invited you to speak. Hopefully that will work. And then I'll see you on the little chat head. She is here. There she is. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. Such a goofball. I'm sorry.
That's okay. So am I.
It's so good to have you here today. So was it, did you have any problem getting in or anything into the podcast?
No, I didn't, which was really good because I have never done this before. So I was really nervous, like, oh my God, all the things that could go wrong. And
I know.
Worst case scenario kind of girl. And so like, that's where my head plays, going, oh my God, what if I can't? I've never done this.
If you can't, we just try again. You know, if you can't, we just do a do-over, you know. It's all good. So how do you say your last name? Saffel?
Yes.
Saffel. I didn't want to say it wrong.
I do write underneath the name Samantha Anderson currently. So but it's just because Saffel is that's my maiden name and it's very difficult to pronounce. And most people would be like, I have no clue, and there's so many double letters in this woman's name.
I don't want to say it wrong. I think it's the letters on my screen are small anyways in my glasses, so yeah, I was like, is it Seth? I was gonna say, I don't know if I would have said it Seth. I would have said it wrong. I would have put an A in the wrong place, something. So tell me, first, why don't you introduce yourself and books first? Tell me, you know, books out, spines out, and, you know, tell everybody about what you write and go across the whole spectrum, because I know you cross genres, which is really yes. cool. And there are a lot of people that always have questions about that. New writers, I have questions about that. readers have questions about that. So if you're willing to out them, just.
Oh, yeah. That's fine with me.
Yeah.
So my name is, I write under the name of Samantha Anderson, and the books I write are the Hellborn series the name of my series. The first one is called Bad Witch Walking. And it is this journey of this witch. She's a ley line witch. Her name is Savannah, and she works with the police as a consultant and also as a hunter. So in this world I have created, Hellborns are vampires, witches, werewolves, any paranormal creature you can think of. And they are citizens. So humans know about them. They coexist with humans. And she hunts the humans that have broken the law. So, she hunts them, the ones that are, you know, maybe broken the law to the point of like breaking and entering or robbery, they get jail time. And there is special jail set up for the Hellborns. And then the ones that have committed things like rape or murder are put down immediately. And she is a hunter and she does these. She executes death warrants. And so the first book is all about us meeting Savannah and a little bit of her complicated life that she has.
it sounds so as a hunter she has would have does she have certain gifts or what she, are the so what are she, the yeah
yeah ahead. she is a ley line witch, so she can pull energy from the earth. There is a belief that the earth is made up of ley lines, and the energy has its own type of energy that it produces. And so she draws energy from these ley lines and she can produce a shield to protect herself. It's like a giant bubble. She can produce a flame in the palm of her hand. And she uses those very sporadically because a lot of times she's in a bigger crowd sometimes hunting individuals. So she also carries a gun and a knife on her.
Are there is there a cost for her to use the ley line magic?
No.
No, okay.
Not originally that we learn in the first book. By the second and third book, we start to see, because she starts pulling off bigger magic. And through all this, she's also navigating her love life. So in the first book, we meet her and Damien and Santiago, who is the second in command of the vampires. And Damien is the head of the wolf pack. Her and Damien have been friends for many years and had a romance. And it ends not so good in the first one. It ends very rough in the first one. And he calls her toxic. And in truth, they're very not good for each other, the two of them. And we get to see her start building this relationship with Santiago. And Savannah has always been on her own. She is somebody that doesn't really have any family. She keeps people at a distance because she does not have happy childhood. She's had to take care of herself. And so Santiago has to walk this tightrope, so to say, and we get to watch him as he does this through Savannah's eyes. And book one, where book one ends, book two starts, which is Bad Karma. And I will give everybody a warning. Anybody who buys my books, the first book, the end of the book, there is a trigger. There needs to be a trigger warning, and I forgot to put it in that book because it does deal with sexual assault. So at the very end of the book, it ends with her getting away from a wolf that tried to rape her.
Yeah.
And so, and it's in her own home.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
that could be a trigger warning.
And so she, book two is, she's investigating these voodoo murders at the same time as she is also investigating her own assault. She knows who did it, but Damien isn't willing to believe her because he automatically goes on the assumption and that it's more than what she's claiming. And the other wolf is claiming that it was consensual. And there's a jealousy there. And he was jealous that she had moved on after their falling out. So to say the least, my readers, the readers I do have, were not very happy with Damien. And I got a little bit of hate mail.
Did you get hate mail?
I got a little bit. I got a little bit.
That means much, your readers are passionate. That's awesome, though.
Not as much as book four's hate mail. Hate mail.
Oh, no.
Yeah. book four's hate mail was rough, man. Book three. So we get to watch Savannah in book two navigate her own investigation and start the healing process and becoming a survivor and not just a victim. Of this crime, because there is a difference between survivor and victim. And so we watch as she's navigating how to get through this emotionally and how it also is affecting those around her, her best friend and Santiago. And so we get to watch as that's happening.
What was it like writing that? I mean, my friend Meryl Pierce, she just wrote a book. It's kind of a fantasy novel. You know, it's out of the norm, but at the same time in the book, there is a war hero who has lost a limb and he feels he's very much dealing with some PTSD and suicide thoughts. And I think there's a scene in the book where he's just, you know, there at the edge. And she had a review that was kind of negative that was, and she had done a trigger warning.
So the review,
yeah. So what was that like? And then the process, she was like, just crying through the whole thing. So
I am a survivor of sexual assault myself. So writing this was on the difficult side. For me, my characters, they all are alive. They live inside my head and I just dictate the story that Savannah gives me. That's my job. She tells me the story, I put it on paper. And so when I was working on that, it was very difficult and navigating those emotions and going through it as my own experience. And so there were moments that like I had to stop for a minute and like collect myself before I went on. And the one thing Savannah has that I didn't have is she has Santiago and she has her best friend, Mary. And Mary and her have this great dynamic where she is Savannah's support in a really good way, but she also brings a lot of humor to situations. So anytime she was feeling, you know, there's a moment where she feels like she just can't win. She cannot beat this individual. And I don't want to say too much because I want people to read the book, but we find out that the assault wasn't just because this guy is a serial rapist. It was an actual setup against her by an individual.
Oh, what a way to, ooh.
And we find this out very publicly. We find this out and then it goes very public. And the assault had already went public, but it went public in the sense of that she had consented to this and that she was lying. So the entire Hellborn community thinks she is lying about being almost raped in her own home.
So there are four books. How many books in this series?
Four books are out right now. I'm working on the book five's edit.
Wait. Four books are out now, but book four is the one that you got the most.
Oh, yeah. I did some things in that book that I was not prepared for. That book is a lot darker. It deals with snuff films. Through the entire series, on top of navigating her life and her career, and she has to walk this tightrope in life because she's a Hellborn, but she's also a hunter. So she works for the humans, and not all humans are accepting of these Hellborns. And so she's always walking this fine line. And on top of this, there is treason happening within the clan. And she also has a stalker.
So if her life, that your characters live inside of you, and you also mm-hmm. suffered, are an overcomer of trauma, that you have, mm-hmm. you're a survivor of trauma. Are there other parallels to your life, do you think, to this character? Do you ever do that? You know, you're writing, yes. I'm going to write a whole brand new character that is nothing like me.
It doesn't go that way.
You know, it has nothing to do with my life.
Damien. Okay. So I love Damien, but in some ways, some of the stuff he says to her in book one is very much like my marriage was, to my ex-husband. And it is, you know, when I started this journey of writing, I was also started a journey of losing weight. And so I had made a decision of going back to writing. I was a stay-at-home mom at the time. I just moved to a new city. I had one friend here and that was it. And I started this writing journey and I decided, why not publish? And so my ex didn't expect me to do anything with this. He was like, oh yeah, publish it. And when I started diving into doing this, he realized he didn't like it. And so it was, he tried to sabotage me more than once.
Oh no.
And
sorry, that's horrible.
Yeah. And there was no support there, no nothing. And it really like woke me up. Like Savannah saved me in a lot of ways. It woke me up going, you need to walk away because this isn't a healthy situation you're in. And so in some ways when Damien says things to Savannah, like, yeah, you know what I need you to do? Get a new job because your job is, you know, makes our life too hard, essentially. We can't be together because of your job, you know, those things. And that toxicity is there. And so, you know, I realized I was editing with my mom. My mom helps me edit all of my books. And she at the time was in California. I was in Colorado and we'd be on the phone for hours and we're editing. And I stopped and I went, holy hell, this is my marriage.
Oh, that's funny. How far were you into the book when you realized that, when you saw that? I mean, how many chapters?
I was probably halfway through the first book, and the first book is the smallest of all four books. And so I was about 170, 180 pages in, and I'm editing he had said they were having this argument and she had already apologized and it was something that wasn't her fault, but she takes the hit for it. And she's like, I'm sorry, this was not how it planned. It got out because of somebody, you know, released this information. And she's trying to like soothe over what's happened. And he's like, he keeps accusing her and blaming her. And she finally says, you know what? I've apologized 1,000 times and it's not my fault. stop blaming me. What the hell do you want me to do? And his response is, get a new job. That's what I want you to do. And I stopped and went, oh my God.
How did that happen?
It really was. It was like, okay. And in honesty, when things officially end between them, it doesn't end in a healthy way between her and Damien, but they do get to a healthy place where they get to be friends.
So if this, you know, you've got a fantasy book, but there's a lot of you in there and there's all this vulnerability. Was it hard to hit that publish button? Because it was, you know, that part of you is going to be out there, even though, well, now everybody knows, but even though when you published it, even, you know, nobody, people who didn't know you wouldn't make the connection. So what was that like? Did you wrestle with that? I mean, and then you have that first week of when it, you know, hits and sells or doesn't sell. So what was that feeling like?
The first hitting that button, like I set everything up, I got the copyright, you know, submitted, and then I hit that button and I went, oh, because originally I didn't know what I was doing. And so when I hit the button, I forgot to change the date. So it went out sooner than it was anticipated to, like 2 weeks early. Oh. Cause I was going to release it on my daughter's birthday. And, because my first book is dedicated to my kids and also to my two adopted daughters that I took in. I didn't adopt them legally, but, they are my children and they're adults. And so I hit submit and then I went, oh no. Because I was like, I had 2 weeks to prepare for this book to come out. And like, I had laid out this plan of how I was going to announce. And then I was like, oh God, it's already going out. Oh God, oh God, oh God. And then that panic set in of like, what if this tanks? What if this tanks? And I'm talking to my mom on the phone and she's like, you know what? Doesn't matter if it tanks because you published a book. You did something that millions of other people say they're going to do and they don't do. So,
wow, I love your mom.
It was kind of like, okay, you're right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
So it's one of those, and you know, writing it book two, I really saw it towards the end of the book, what she realizes, cause Damien does eventually apologize and he says some pretty terrible things to her through book two. What I realized is that, you know, it wasn't just a bad marriage. We were just bad together. We were bad for one another. And staying in that was just so unhealthy for not just he and I, but for our kids too.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's one of those things that like, you realize it by the end of book two, I was like, wow, yeah, it's totally true. And by that point, my marriage was almost completely over at that point. I hadn't said the words, but we really lived separate lives. And so it was just a, oh my God moment.
Just that moment where you're like, So what the progression of stories from, when you first started writing to publishing your first book, what was that? What was your timeline like? And, you know, how long did it take? What was I'll read your comment, Tom, in just a minute. How long did it, you know, it takes different timelines. Everybody has their own timeline, but yours sounds like it was real life pretty quick. It was just, So what was that like?
So I originally started this book. I started the first book. Let's see, I'm trying to think. It was probably almost 4 years ago. I started the first book and I went from that first, I went and it took me a while to finish that book because one, I didn't know what I was doing. And even today, now I'm like, I need to re-edit that book. Because there
don't we all? The first book is crap. The first book is always crap. It's crap. It doesn't matter. It's just crap.
Yep.
And you go back and people love it and they don't know. You know,
right.
A lot of your readers who become fans, they don't really understand that it's crap. And they're like, why are you saying that?
Yeah.
But we know.
We know. You know, and I've done a live read with it. Like I did that. I went through this huge transition recently. I finally moved out of my ex's place and into my own place with the kids. And I met this guy that is now my fiance, and he and I pretty much dated over the phone throughout COVID. We met in July and we dated over the phone, and he became my best friend. And so like when I'm on this journey of trying to rebuild my life and starting over again, and I kind of slipped out of the Facebook world because I was trying to repair me. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm having to, you know, start over, so to say. And I was reading, doing a live read of, and I had decided I was going to do a live read and do section out of each book, two out of the first two books on this day. And then the next day I would do the next two books. And I was reading book one, a section of book one, and I went, oh, this is terrible.
Oh, no.
This is terrible. Yeah. And it's really not bad writing. It just needs to be re-edited.
But, yeah.
I mean, my mom and I had no clue what we were doing. And so it's one of those that book two, I think it really is such a better book, in my opinion. And then you have book three, and book three is even bigger. And so is book four. Bad Origins takes on a kidnapping, and it's not just a kidnapping it takes on that it starts with one hybrid, and she's the only hybrids that there are out there are vampire and witch. They're the only two that can produce together. Vampires generally can't produce, but every once in a while it does happen and you get a hybrid. Or you can have a witch that gets turned, but she doesn't get fully turned into a vampire. So she'll have characteristics of a vampire, but not necessarily the full thing. And so hybrids aren't necessarily accepted by humans, and they're not accepted by the Hellborns either a lot of times, because they're not just a witch or they're not just a vampire. They're half of each. And so you have this hybrid young that has been taken. And it develops into so much more. And we learn that these other hybrid children have been taken. And this group that is a group of witches is an actual hate group. And they play a role in this. And I'm a history buff. And so this facility I have created in this book is based off of what happened during World War II with Dr. Mengele, what he did to children. And I know a lot about World War II, and I have delved in. I went even farther in things I didn't know had happened. And so that one was a little bit tough to write, because these terrible things were happening to these kids. And some of them had lived years in this facility, and more than just science experiments were being done on them. And so we dive into that, and we dive into Savannah's past a little bit too, because her mother comes into play in this book, and we find out what a terrible, terrible person she is. And one of the lessons in this book is just because you come from terrible parents doesn't mean you have to be a terrible person.
Yes.
You know, I have one parent. I've always had one parent essentially. And that's because my other parent walked away and started a completely new family. And so I'm not such a good person. And so, and I have on my mom's side, my mom's parents abandoned her to my great grandmother. And so, you know, seeing that and having those experiences, you know, we make a choice of who we are, who we become. And that's what that was about. And so you get to see that role, and you get to see how, just because that's your parent, it doesn't mean you have to love them. It doesn't mean you have to even care about them. And we get to learn about Savannah's past and what makes Savannah who she is as a survivor, and who she becomes, and why she was so, it was so hard for her to say to Santiago, I love you. And it took almost an entire year of them together before she said, I love you to him. So we get to see that.
So there's all this, there's recovery and redemption and mm-hmm. and settling into identity
yeah.
in a fantastic sounding paranormal. So where do the mystery books come in?
So this where is actually, that, this is actually this, where she does all of this is happening while she's investigating crimes.
While she's investigating crimes. So yeah. Oh, wow. Very cool. Now, what do your books have gotten longer as you've gotten more?
Yeah, and you have this other element of Matthew, and Matthew is a stalker. He's a vampire, and he's connected to our main bad guy. That things are happening in the background the entire series, and sometimes it comes up front, and we have to deal with it, and then it gets pushed back to the back again until something bigger happens with these individuals. And so I'm working on book 5. I still have 2 more books after this to finish the series. But Matthew is an individual, and we meet him in the very first book, but you don't see him all the time. He's always there, but you don't see him until Matthew wants you to see him. Mm-hmm. And he is infatuated with Savannah. And so you have this dominant male who becomes infatuated with her, and she is with a dominant male as well. And she's a very dominant individual. And so he stalks them and preys upon them. And so you get to see that throughout the series. And so at random moments, Matthew will call, or he sends her flowers, things like that, to remind her he's still there. So we get to see
creepy.
That.
Creepy.
Yeah, and, you know, when I write Matthew, you know, all of them live in my head. I have probably 50 plus characters in this series. And Matthew is always, when I work on his scenes, it's like he's breathing on my neck. I can feel him like pressed against my back as I'm typing. And I'm like, okay, dude, can you like back up? Like, this is.
Yeah. You want me to tell your story? You're going to have to back up because.
Like, personal space, personal bubble, you know? And, yes. And he's always like, so book 4 is actually where we get a lot of Matthew, and she comes face to face, head to head with him, but it's not their final battle. And so that book is, I mean, it's intense and it goes very dark. It's about snuff films. The snuff film comes up. And
did you have to research snuff films as well?
Yes, I did.
Oh my goodness. So now I'm just going to ask a question about snuff films. Okay. Did you find current, you know, like the dark web?
So what I found was I watched a number of documentaries, and the FBI says that there's no such thing as a snuff film. But there is an individual that did a snuff film. He murdered an individual in Canada, and he had released the film of this murder of this individual when he did it. And then he did much more to this body, and they hunted him. And so I watched a documentary on snuff films in general. Mm-hmm. Then I watched a documentary on this individual. And let's just say my mental status, I will never be the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have dived into this world, and
some of the places where you have to take your research change you.
Yeah. Yes. And I have a lot of knowledge. I have a degree in criminal justice. I don't work in the criminal justice world, but I do have degrees in criminal justice. And so I know how the law works, and I know how police and forensics works. And I always am the person that watches the documentaries on the serial killers and have books on serial killers. And so it's one of those that I have all this information, and that's a lot of where this comes from. And I just pull all that information from different spots. But snuff films was a completely different.
Yeah, that's not, thing. It's not, you know, it's not some mainstream. I've seen it in a couple movies, so I never would have heard. I think it was a Nicolas Cage movie or something.
Yes, it was.
I wanted to ask, so you've got 4 books, you have 2 more to go. Have you hit that, I don't want to do this anymore point? I mean, have there been days, or you sound really excited and pumped about, you know, your story and but have you ever hit that moment where I'm just like, I want to start something different. I'm done. I don't want to talk to these people anymore in my head.
you know, when I was going through everything last year, yes, I was. I was at that point where I was like, I'm just going to kill off this individual and end the series. And my mom was like, no, you're not. What the hell are you thinking? And, for the record, by the end of book four, when she was done editing book four, she actually did come to me and was like, I'm not talking to you right now. So she was not,
you're poor readers. You're one of those. I write romance, so I don't have to deal with that. But,
you know, but it was one of those, you know, and when I wrote, there's a scene with the snuff film in it. Mm-hmm. And it's this individual that we know about, but from a previous book, but we didn't know what occurred, what had happened to her. And we didn't know everything about what had happened to her. And so we find out in this moment, mm-hmm. and it brings back that trauma because one of the players in it is the individual that attempted to rape her. And so, it's this whole thing. And so she's dealing, that trauma comes back. And so she's dealing with that. And my mom, I was in the middle of editing another section while she was on one, and she comes into my room and goes, just wanted to say, that snuff film, wow. And I said, is that a good wow or a bad wow? And she said, you did a really good job with that. And I said, I don't know what to say. Do I say thank you or...
I'm sorry. You know? Exactly.
And that was one of those things. But there are days where you go, why do I do this? And I had a writing teacher years ago. I was probably about 21 at the time. And I said to him, I said, do you ever have the days where you think, I'm just going to quit? And he says, yeah, you have to be bipolar to do this job. And he's right. He was right. He was completely right. Like, there are days where you're like, I just don't want to, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. Because you're struggling with the scene and you can't get the words and you can see it, but you can't put it on paper and you can't find mm-hmm. the words. And you're like, you know, I mean, it's just one of those right now. I mean, I took my laptop, I unplugged it the other day. I walked into the living room. I'm like, okay, this is what I'm trying to say, but I can't find the words. And what do I do? And so we sat there and we're going, okay. And we're playing with the words. And then finally I was like, I got it. And it was like one word I was missing and I couldn't just.
I couldn't see that one word and it ruins the whole thing. You know,
the word was phantom. That's the funny thing. The word I was looking for was phantom. And I was like, I cannot, what the hell is that word? I know the word. And I'm like, and I wrote that section probably three times, erase, rewrite, before I figured out the word phantom.
Do you have a process you know, because now you're writing and you're kind of in business for yourself. So what is the business of writing? What does that look like for you?
So I am in some ways rebuilding. I had this fairly good Facebook presence before I started rebuilding my life. And I had taken this huge step back between the pandemic and I also have a day job because you have to have a day job unless, you know, you're like J.R. Ward. I mean, J.R. Ward's like my hero and I'd love to be J.R. Ward, but I'm not. And so.
Oh, Black Dagger Trilogy. Yeah. Black Dagger.
Yeah.
Isn't it funny that those books that I read them when they came out and I'm on TikTok and they're like this one and this one and all. And I'm like, where have you been? They're a little dated now and they're still good. I still love them, but they're definite. And you're loving, I'm glad you're loving them too, but I'm just, where were you? Some of them weren't born, I imagine. I don't
know. So I'm like, I'm having to rebuild. And so what it takes is what I've learned is one, you got to learn how to make graphics. That's first and foremost, find out where you get free pictures.
Yes.
And one of the hardest things for me is always trying to find that, like, the right little snippet to put on a graphic for a teaser.
Oh, I'm terrible at them. I wish I could. Yeah.
I have no.
Where
so
do you
better.
Get your free pictures? Where do you get?
Upsplash. I use that.
I love Upsplash. Yeah.
I also use, what's the other one? Upsplash. And I can't think of the other one it's called now.
Is it Pix? Pix. I don't know.
Yeah. That one.
I don't know.
Upsplash, I tend to like a little bit better in some ways. The hard thing is because the indie world, you have all of these romance writers trying mm-hmm. to find the image that they're not using is very difficult.
I bet.
And I have a friend that we run our book group together, and she has used the same image for a teaser for hers as I have for mine. And it happens. The other thing is you're on all the time. You have to plan posts. You have to go and you have to find book groups. So yes. It's a constant, I am part of, I don't know how many book groups. And so it's trying to manage your morning before you get to work going, okay, I need to post in this group, and this group. And so what a lot of times I do is I have everything on my phone so I can post no matter where I'm at, whether it's I'm at home or I'm at work. And before I start my day at work, I can post because I work at an elementary school. So during the day, I cannot be on Facebook. I cannot be doing, you know, the writer thing as much as I would love to. I just can't. And so it's a constant post and finding book groups you can post in and knowing the rules for every book group, by the way, is.
Oh, that's key, especially on Facebook. You know, yeah. You can get in a lot of trouble, but yeah, go ahead.
There's one book group and I love being able to post on there. I love doing events on there, but I have to, because you can't do anything higher than on that page, like PG or PG-13. I'm like, mm-hmm. Okay, I have to be very choosy of what I'm posting now. And that's the challenge because I have a lot of sex and I have violence and I have, you know, there's some gruesome things that happen in my books. You know,
yes.
There's a behead. There's one spot where a head shows up at her doorstep. So, you know, and you know, it's actually really funny when the head shows up because of whose head it is. And it comes from Matthew and, Savannah's, he sends it as a gift to her. With the thing of roses and he sends her red roses with it's nine red roses and three white roses in the middle with this beheaded individual with just the head. And she picks up the head out of the box and she's out of this cooler that she finds on her doorstep and Santiago standing behind her. And he says something along the lines of, I wish I could say that I'm sad he is dead, but I'm not. And then Mary's with them and she says, boy, I can tell you this. He really knows how to give a gift. And that's what Mary brings to the picture of everything.
That's great. That's great. What is one thing that you wish you had known before you started, when you sat down and first started writing?
That's a hard one. I would say, the marketing is the hardest part for me. So I would say that knowing how to market better. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm still learning. Like every time I think, okay, I've mastered this. And now I'm like, oh, there's authors doing TikTok videos. I really don't want to join TikTok, but TikTok, but those look really cool. Oh, there's something else for me to learn.
Okay. Learning curve. What is advice you would give somebody who was like, okay, I'm going to sit down today and write? Would you say, look at the marketing and don't give that, you know, I just had this, a quick conversation on Twitter. They were like, you know, what is piece of advice? And my advice was know your audience, but you know, can't market if you don't know who your audience is going to be. It's really hard.
Here's my thing. I say one, know how to market. If you can learn how to market, that's a huge thing. If you're going to write a book that you want to read. Here's the thing. Reviews are for readers. They're not your business. They're not for you. They are for the reader, other readers and potential readers. And you're never going to make everybody happy. You're just not.
Very true.
I mean, I have some that are like, this book had me on. I have most of my reviews are like this. She had me on the edge of my seat. I loved it, blah, blah, blah. And then there's like one review where she's like, oh, I saw everything coming.
Oh no.
And you're like, yeah, okay, whatever. You know, I try not to read reviews just for the simple fact that that's reader's business and I will drive myself insane.
Oh yeah.
Doing it. I will drive myself insane reading it because I become obsessive compulsive and I know it. And so write the story you want to read. If it's something you're going to want to read and you enjoy writing it, it will come through the pages.
Yes. That's very true. Very true.
You know, I there's certain books, certain authors, and I love their work and they have a book. There's always this one book and I'm like, Oh, so you were going through some shit when you wrote that book, because that's not a very enjoyable book. You know, J.R. Ward, I love her books, but like The Chosen, I hate that book. I feel I will never get that time back from when she wrote that book and I read it. I love all the other books, but that book, I was like, what were you thinking? Were you on crack that day?
What was going on in your life? What's happening? And who said this was okay?
Yeah. And then when I found out, like, she was going through, she had lost her mentor, and I was like, oh, that explains it.
Yeah.
Okay. That explains why that book was so vastly different. Yeah. And we all do that as an author. No matter how much we try to prevent that spillover, it happens, because writing is a part of who we are. As a writer, you cannot write. You have to write. That compulsion is always there.
Yeah. You have to tell the story. You have to. And you've got all these little alter egos in you that are just some little shard of something that happened. And, excuse me. Oh, that's great. That's great. No, I think that you're right, that you have to write the book you love. That was what I wanted to ask. So as you're writing, and you said you edit with your mom, what is the biggest editing thing you've learned from book one to book four?
So one, you'll always miss something.
Yes.
Doesn't matter how hard you try. Does not matter. You will always miss something. And it's usually more than one something.
My books, I have a publisher, and they're professionally edited. And so we pay that. And I still have readers who are very gracious. I just wanted you to know that here, and here.
You know, so when she lived in California, her and I would be on the phone for hours and hours. And we would be, you know, some of the time it was like, change this wording. And Santiago's very European. He's 400 years old, and he's from Spain, and he's very European and old European. So he speaks properly. He doesn't have words in his vocabulary like can't or don't. And so, like, I have to remember that. And if he's got a long speech, God help me. And it's these moments, and she'll be like, you lost him there. I go, okay, how do we fix this? And so we go through. And then there's other moments where it's like we sit there and we bicker for 10 minutes over like two words. You shouldn't use that. Well, I'm going to use that, but it doesn't work. Yes, it does. If you read it like this, it does. Well, not everybody's going to read it that way. Well, that's not
my
problem.
Great. That's
you know?
Great.
And the nice thing is my fiance, you know, when I started this, my ex-husband, I had used a word, and it was a fairly large word. I have a very large vocabulary. And he said, well, people aren't going to know what that word means. And I said, well, then they can look it up. I'm not dumbing down my writing because they don't know that word.
Yeah.
And so my fiance, he's not like that. He's like, yeah, they'll just look it up. I know what that word is. You know, and so it's one of those. And it's learning to edit is the tough thing. And then when you are starting to master editing and you read other people's books, you're like, you start noticing those little things that they've missed.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Little things. Oh, and then, you didn't need that. So there, that, why did you have so that you didn't, you could have cut that one too.
You know, you start doing that. And then, and if it's an author friend, if it's a friend of yours, you're like, oh, I'm a terrible person.
But, no, they would, you know, your author friends like, yes, why didn't you tell me that? Darn. It's like that one, those words, they ruin the whole thing for us.
Yeah.
You know,
And I'm telling you, the first book, the book one, there is in the very beginning of the book, we argued for 20 minutes on whether to use night clothes or pajamas.
That's fantastic.
20 minutes. And she was visiting at the time. And so we're sitting across the living room, each with a computer, arguing with each other. And I'm going, it should be night clothes. It sounds better. And she's like, just use pajamas. It's better. That's what people call it. I said night clothes. And we're arguing for 20 minutes about night clothes or pajamas.
Oh, that's fantastic. Okay. I would love, thank you for coming on. And so many insights into just the process and how much of our characters, you know, how much of ourself ends up in the characters. That is fascinating. And your story sounds amazing. Your books sound
Thank you.
Very, very cool. Just really adventurous and fun and yeah, and scary and moving and
I will say, there's been a couple times. There's one big scene in book four that I didn't cry, but I had to like push the computer away, and I was like, I think I'm broken now. And that because of that scene, and it wasn't just me that I broke, which is kind of good, but that's why I got the hate mail. One of my friends, she's my friend Ellie, she's an author, and she posted on one of my live reads, she was like, "So Lent's coming, and I've decided to give you up for 40 days." And I told her, I said, "But we run a book group together. You can't." She's like, "I'll talk to your mom. She's an admin on the page. It's fine." So it was nice to know it wasn't just me that was like, and here's the thing, I didn't see it coming until I started writing it, and then I was like, "What have I done? Oh no." And then I just sat there like, "I don't know if I can do it anymore today."
I've had moments. I need space. I need to get away. I need space from these words for a while. I need to watch a Netflix series or something in one day. binge on something for just one day and eat, and then I'll get back to it.
I was so broken, and I just was like, I can't even cry. I'm that broken. And I know what's to come next. I started book six, and I have to redo the entire thing that I've written a book six because it's not good, and did not go the way it should have went. So I have to start over on that book. But I know what's happening. I know what's coming because there are certain scenes in the book I've written because Savannah gave them to me, and already I'm like trying to gear myself up and prepare for what's to come.
Oh, the
And
emotion.
the hate mail that I'm going to receive at the end of
Oh,
that
no.
book.
I have much respect for you knowing that hate mail's coming and not changing the story, just letting the story do the what it needs to
You have to, because again, I don't control this. Savannah does. And
do.
if, she goes away, then what do? I can't finish the series without her. And I mean, yes, I'm about to start another series, and I'm going to take it a completely different route in the sense of the type of characters we're dealing with and what's happening in the stories. And I'm also co-writing this book, this new series. And so it's going to be a completely learning curve for everyone involved. And I want to be able to finish Savannah's stories and have the other series. So it's one of those that I want to be able to give my readers that story. And I know how the series ends because I've written the final chapter of the final book. But I got to get us there. So I need Savannah there so I can get us to the end.
You need your character there. No, I yeah, you need to be true. Sometimes I've done that too, where I just like, aha, this is breaking rules. It's breaking all the rules. I'm not supposed to do it this way, but gosh, the characters and the story is just saying, nope, I want to go this way, so I guess this is where we're going.
Here's the thing. Rules are meant to be broken. And that's the way I look at it. There are very few rules in writing that you have to stick with when it comes to fiction writing. And you can't be scared of breaking a rule because somebody may say, well, you're not supposed to do that. The first sex scene I ever wrote, I was in college and I was in this creative writing group. And we had to turn in, everybody had to do peer reviews. And so we would do a peer review as a group. And this woman, I did this scene, and this woman's like, well, you did a love scene, no-no. I'm like,
Oh, a
what is
no-no.
that?
What's a no-no? A love
What?
scene, no-no.
I had all these great reviews and these actual like critical thinking reviews going, okay, change the wording here and add this, and this is really good. And this woman's like, well, you had the start of the sex scene, the entire act, and then the how it ended with, and it ended like this. And that's a sex scene. No. I'm like, huh? What? And it was that. And I was like, well, I'm not changing it, so I don't care.
Who says?
And part of it was just, you know, people create these rules of you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do this. And you really need to think about how much you care what that person thinks.
Mm-hmm.
Don't ask for permission. Just do what you know is right. Do the thing that you enjoy and what you want to read and screw the rest.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a certain bit of, what is it? Chutzpah, balls. You know, you just need to do and not care what others. Sometimes you have to figure out that balance between, you know, correct grammar, and which is always important, and doing it the way it needs to be done. And that's awesome. I mean, I don't know if I was getting hate mail like you, I might be like, you know, maybe I shouldn't redo it. But
you know, one of them was like, I'd like to thank you. One of the ones I got, and she was one of my first readers, and she's on my ARC team. And she, like, I get this message and I'm in the middle of my work day, and I get this message and I look at my phone quickly, and it says, I just wanted to say thank you because last night I ugly cried at 11 PM when I finished the book, and I ugly cried myself to sleep. So thanks so much for that. And you better not go. And she's like, and now this person's my world. So you better not kill them off. Cause so help me God, we're going to have a problem.
Yeah. I'm coming to your house.
And you're like, do you say I'm sorry? Do you say you're welcome?
I don't know what to say now.
And here's the thing, like the person she's talking about now that like she warned me about, something bad does happen to him. And so I'm like, oh, wait until she reads that book when it comes. Oh no, 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 no. That mail's not going to be good. And so I'm like mentally preparing for that message when it comes through.
Oh no, that's funny.
Yeah, I had a few of those.
Well, good. And at least you have time to, you know, prepare yourself. And you know.
Yeah.
You know, you got plenty of time there, so that's good. But yeah. Okay. Well, I would love for you to read and hear from these books. Just introduce how many we have. I like the podcast to go about an hour. It's just easier to manage. So I'm going to cut a little bit off the beginning. So you probably have about 15 minutes you could read. So you can read from one book or you can read from two. It's up to you.
Well, you know, I had such a, I'm always this like thorough thinker of like, how am I going, like, what am I going to read? And how long do I have? And all these things. And so like, I have all these pages marked now. So one of the first scenes I'm going to read is from book two. It's from Bad Karma. Savannah is going to Damien with Mary to put in a claim for retribution against the individual that has raped her. His name is Robert. And we meet Robert actually in the very first book, just as sporadic. And he's very annoying and persistent. And you don't think anything of him other than he's an asshole. And at one point, Savannah calls him that. She's like, he's an asshole. And you don't really think anything past that. And so she goes to the pack. He was unaware she was going to come with Mary. Mary has an order of protection over her along with Santiago, because Mary is also a vampire and they're part of the same clan. Santiago is much higher ranking than Mary is, but Mary is, she is a power unto herself because she's Mary. And so they go to see Damien, and it doesn't go well. And I'm going to pick it up where she asks Mary to leave so she can talk to Damien. Mary, leave us. I need to talk to Damien, I said. She looked at me, shocked at my request. No, please, I asked. She looked from him to me before I nodded my head to try to reassure her. I will be right outside if you need me. Mary walked across the room, her steps loud in the silence. I waited for the door to click shut before I looked at the angry wolf king. Damien, you have to believe me. So any wolf will do now, he said before I could finish. Excuse me? You fuck me in the woods and then you go to Santiago. And now I'm supposed to believe Robert I'm supposed to believe Robert attacked you? You sure know how to get around, Savannah, he spat as he prowled the dais. You kissed me. You were the one ripping my clothes off from my body. As I recall, that night you were the one trying to mark me as yours. Yes, I fucked you in the woods that night, but I didn't fuck Robert. I said no. You stand there and call me a whore when you are just as guilty about what happened between us. You call me a whore for moving on with my life? You ran and took a mate 2 weeks later. What was I supposed to do? Pine for you? For the rest of my life? Wait for you? What was I supposed to do? Stop your mating? By the way, how is the missus? He growled as I let the anger I had been searching for fill me. Robert shows up here smelling like you. Your scent was so strong I could smell it a mile away. It was difficult to smell his own scent underneath yours. You should have seen how he smiled as he walked through here. He must have really enjoyed the taste of you. From what I hear, his tongue got to know your body well. Was he good, Savannah? As good as me? I stormed towards him. I stood inches from the dais as I began to yell. The anger that seemed to have lured me the night before and this morning was there as I stood face to face with the male I had once loved. The love I had felt at 20 was long gone. The only thing I felt now was disgust for the wolf he had become. The look he had worn as he walked in here had been jealousy. The jealousy he was feeling fueled my anger. Look at the bruises where he held me down. You want to see where he drew blood from my breast to teach me a lesson, as he called it? Look at my face. See this? Where he hit me when I tried to make a noise as he was on top of me? You stand there calling me a whore and a liar? He assaulted me. He tried to rape me. I stood in Mary's shower for an hour, scrubbing my body, trying to get the feel of that piece of shit off of me. How dare you believe him over me? I screamed in his face. Damien stood there saying nothing. His copper eyes were alight as I screamed. What do you want from me? He growled low. I want his head. I want justice for what he did. He's my queen's twin. Am I supposed to believe you over him? His voice was almost a growl again. I could not believe what I was hearing. Robert's words now carried more weight than mine. What the hell had happened? Any affection I had once felt for Damien evaporated in that moment. I would never see him as I had before. You are saying no to the claim, I asked, trying to calm down. I am saying, where is your proof? I laughed a mirthless laugh right in his face. I heard my own voice grow cold. Fine, I will get you proof. Know this, I find that wolf, I will burn him where he stands. Do you understand me? Are you threatening my pack? Not a threat. Those are illegal. This is a promise. I promise I will set him ablaze and roast marshmallows in the flames coming from his body. I turned and headed for the door. The rage I was riding felt good. It made me feel strong and nothing like I had been feeling earlier. It was like my blood was boiling inside my veins. I wanted to burn the building down where I stood. I wanted to set Damien on fire for everything he had said to me. He hated me that much for his choices. He could stand there and call me a whore. I turned before I walked out the door. Go fuck yourself, Damien, I said. I walked out the door, letting it slam shut behind me. Mary looked at me, her own anger present in her green eyes, with a cold smile on her face. A roar filled the building as the sound of wood splintered, followed by another roar. Something heavy hit the door in the wall. I looked at the door, expecting it to swing open. It didn't, just the sound of breaking wood. I walked away, leaving the Wolf King to his temper tantrum. I had loved Damien deeply. The smell of him had been the scent that made me smile, no matter how I was feeling. Those memories were ones of joy for me. Now those memories were tainted and would always be. Robert had bragged about what had happened. He had acted like I had wanted him. The thought made the rage in my soul grow to a level I had never felt before. To make matters worse, Damien had believed the lies. He had called me a whore for moving on. Whatever happened next didn't matter. My relationship with the wolves had forever been altered. The rage that set my blood boiling was too strong to even feel anything else. I needed to figure out what my next step was. Where did I go from here?
Ooh. That's intense. Oh, yeah. Good Lord.
that was, when I wrote that scene, it was intense writing that.
I bet. Yeah, very much. Do you listen to music when you write?
I do, actually.
What? I can just imagine the music for that. What were you listening to for that? What was your inspiration?
I have such a wide variety of on my play music, and I listen to everything. But for that scene, I want to say I was listening either to rap or metal.
Oh yeah,
when I
or
read that.
industrial or something, you know.
Yes.
I just there was just some yeah, you could almost hear it in the background. It very aggressive, and between both of them, she may have been victimized, but that woman's no victim.
No, and she feels like a victim up until that point. And even after that, once she has to tell Santiago, because she hasn't even told Santiago at that point. And it scares her to tell him because she doesn't want him to look at her as a victim because she's worked in the criminal justice system. She works in that system, and she knows what it's like for victims. So, and she works with cops. So she doesn't want even her cop friends to know because they will look at her differently because she's one, a female, and two, she's been victimized now. And so she doesn't want that. And so she's having this battle and she feels like a victim. And there reaches a point where she stops feeling like a victim and starts taking her life back. And that's the big key to surviving that trauma. So it was definitely one of those writing that scene was, yeah, there was a lot of fuel in that one.
Yeah, I can definitely sense that. Do you want to read more?
I would love to read more.
Oh, please.
So I was tossing, I was at a toss up of between a sex scene or it's short, it's probably 8 hours after Santiago has found out. And she's been staying at Mary's house because she can't bring herself to go into her own home at this point. She doesn't feel safe there. So she's staying at Mary's house and Santiago comes to see her. And he's dealing with it. You know, we talk about the victims of assault, but we never talk about how it affects the people around them. And so we kind of see it in this scene. Santiago can, he has the ability to use people's emotions either for with them or against them. And so he can either spread calm or spread hate or make you feel his own disgust for an individual. And so we get to see that in this next part. The sleep was peaceful until a dream pushed through the darkness. I felt the pressure of another body on top of me, a hand clamped down on my wrists. I tried to see who it was, finding only blackness surrounding me. The smell of burnt coffee and sweat were all I could smell. I fought, kicking my legs, body bucking, trying to throw him off of me. No quarter was given as I tried to break his hold. A husky laughter came from all around me, growing louder as the more I fought back. Panic set in, causing my heart to race. A hand brushed over my side, breaking the dream. I sat up, breathing hard in the darkened room. Savannah, it is okay. You are safe, came a soothing voice. I was panting as Santiago spoke softly, continuing his reassurance. It is only me, he said. My breathing and heart rate began to slow. The calmness that coated my skin was a relief from the emotional pain I was feeling, even if it was a false feeling. I welcomed the calmness with greedy hands for once. I pulled him closer as he sat on the bed until I could hold his hand as if he were a lifeline. His other hand ran smoothly down the side of my face. My breathing was slowly returning to normal as I lay clinging to Santiago's hand. Are you okay? He asked. I am now. Thank you for that. For what? For using your mojo on me. You are okay with me using my ability? His voice held disbelief in it. Months ago, he had used his ability to calm me, and I had made him a promise never to do it again. Pain was part of life. I had accepted that a long time ago. It built character, made you stronger. The pain and fear I was feeling now was different. The emotions I was feeling were kicking my ass, and I needed to feel less of them at the moment. I need something to dull everything down right now. I will do what I can while I can, he replied. You aren't staying? A new panic set in. I do not know. This is Mary and Duncan's home. I am not sure if I should stay longer than is polite. She said it was fine. Please stay, I asked. He paused for a moment to look at me. I could hear the word no before he even spoke it. I do not wish to overstay my welcome. His hands dropped away from my face as he sat on the edge of the bed, not meeting my gaze. What's wrong? I asked. I do not know how to act. What do you mean? I want to kiss you. I want to hold you, but I can feel how uncomfortable that makes you.
so I do not know how to behave without upsetting you, he explained. His touch earlier in the day had made me uncomfortable. He had that correct, but I wanted no one touching me. It wasn't just him. I didn't know how long that discomfort would last, but I didn't want to lose Santiago because of it. Can you please stay with me? Just lay next to me and hold my hand. I know it's not the same as holding me, but it's something. He looked at me as his resolve began to crumble. I lay on my side, moving to the far side of the bed. I pulled his hand slightly, trying to encourage him to join me. He gave in, finally. It was enough as he lay down facing me. He took both my hands, intertwining them into his large ones and holding them tight. The comfort in the touch was more than I could say. Part of me wanted him to hold me close to him, but I wasn't sure I could handle that much closeness yet. It felt like I was having to start over in the trust department. Every inch of my life was upside down, and I didn't know how to flip it right side up again. I hate that you felt you had to come to Mary for safety, he said in the darkness. I didn't need any special powers to feel the pain he was in. I'm sorry. I wanted to turn to you. You were my first thought, but Dante being under the same roof was a factor for me. I needed a place I knew I was safe from any threats. I understand why you felt the need to come here. It does not mean I have to like it. Santiago's dislike of the situation was evident in his voice. There was silence as we lay next to each other. I can't go back to my place ever again, I said finally. What do you mean? The place feels tainted, like it's diseased. I have to go back to look over the place if I'm going to work this like any other case, but I couldn't go in there today. I sat in my car and panic set in. Mary had to go in to get my computer. I want to burn the place to the ground and start over. I am sorry. It's not your fault. It's Robert's, and in a way, mine. You did not do this, nor did you invite violence into your home, he snapped. I should have been more careful. I should have been more vigilant with my safety. I ignored his words. Mi amor, you did nothing wrong. He tried to reassure me. Thank you for saying that, but I did. Listen to me. You did nothing wrong. He is the one who did wrong. I will not allow you to blame yourself for the actions of another, he said sternly. I wasn't sure if it was the entire situation or Santiago's words, but it pushed me over the edge in the emotional department. I began to cry once more. I will find a way to ensure you are safe. I give you my word, he said as he stroked my head. It was nice to hear, but it made me feel weak. All of this made me feel weak. I was weak for not protecting myself. I was weak for not being able to face my home. I was weak for allowing this to affect Santiago. I was weak for everything I couldn't handle. Being weak was not me. How do I stop all of this? I need to figure out how to do that myself, I said around the tears. His voice was tight as he spoke. Let us work on it together. I said nothing as I lay next to Santiago. I tried to stop the tears. The silence that stretched between us was long and painful. We had always been able to be with one another without conversation. Usually we could have a comfortable silence, even before we were together, as if us being together was enough. Now this thing had invaded that silence, making it something dark, dirty even. We both were feeling the hurt for one and for the other. I didn't know how I was going to get us back to where we were before this. I didn't know if there was any getting back. Maybe this was just one of those breaking moments, forever creating a black stain between us. The thought of losing him broke me in half, which started a new set of tears. I had been fine being alone before him. The problem was Santiago had made me want things I had never wanted before or even given much thought about. I had thoughts about us being together long term, maybe even mating at some point. Those were thoughts I had never really had with anyone else. Losing him meant I would have to let all of those beautiful thoughts go. For the first time in my life, I'd been thinking about my future. I could see the life I wanted with him. Now, as I lay in the dark, clinging tightly to his hand, it seemed as if it was all slipping away. I would have to learn how to be alone all over again. I wasn't sure how I was going to manage it. I knew I didn't want the life I had prior to Santiago. The truth was, the life I had led on my own was not much of a life. It was an existent. It was just existing. I worked and went home day in, day out. Yeah, I had Mary, but even I kept her at a distance. Santiago made me pause, made me want more than my work. The thought of him walking away made my chest tight. Felt like I couldn't breathe. What the hell was I going to do? If Santiago couldn't handle this, I would do what I did best. I would take the pain of all of this and wear it as an armor, returning to the existence I knew so well before him. The fear in me was saying he was suffering just as I was. Letting him go would save him from me. "I'm here to stay, Savannah," he whispered into the darkness. "How? I can taste your emotions, and I know you. I don't want you to hurt," I replied with tears running down my face. "I know you do not want to be in pain. You do not want me in pain. But you must understand, there is more than pain that I am feeling. I am angry. I want that mutt to suffer for what he has done. I want to be the one who stops his heart from beating. I want to be the last thing he sees as he begs for mercy. I want the same thing, except I want it to be me," I broke in. "I know." "I don't want you looking at me as a victim," I said. "I do not look at you as a victim. I look at you as the female I love who was violated. We will find our way through this, Savannah. I promise this." I inched closer to him, resting my head close to his chest, our hands intertwined, pressed close to my chest. He had said he loved me. It was the first time he had said it out loud. I wanted to say it back, but wasn't sure how to. The sense of security in that moment chased all the monsters away. Santiago was my home. He was my safe place. No matter where we were, it scared me to think I had grown to need this man, this male, as much as I did. I had never had anyone who could make me feel the way he did. Lying next to him, holding his hand, in that moment, I had finally found what all those love songs were talking about.
Wow. I like that line, that last line. That's a really good line.
Thank you.
That's a really strong line. That was a really good scene, too.
Thank you. Yeah. It's one of my favorite chapters.
Oh, yeah. It's very, you know, fine. That's the romance right there.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Does it exist? I don't know.
You know what? Yeah. I did not believe that it existed until I met my fiance. And he really is my best friend. And I, you know, he is my Santiago in a lot of ways. And the things that, you know, we have in common, and we can talk, and he wants to be a part of every part of me being an author, which is a huge thing. So
yes. Yeah.
He really is. He really is that individual for me.
That's fantastic. That's neat. That I, you know, I like your books are awesome, but you've got this incredible journey in the writing of them. And then in the writing of them, you're created a whole new world, but you have got all the human in them that people are going to relate to. Women, your readers are, men are going to relate to that, that all the human is in there, and they're going to be like, ah! You know, they had that moment, and that's what makes good books. So that's amazing. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
I really appreciate you. Yeah, this was great. I learned some stuff, and oh, and the books, I'm gonna have to get them in my yeah, I'm gonna have to look you up and follow you on Amazon. You should. Yes. Are you on Amazon?
I am on. I publish through Draft to Digital, so I get to publish everywhere. So, but I am on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Apple also carries my books. So
do you have a preference where you like books bought from, or?
I don't, I okay. really don't. It, you know what? I'm just happy when people buy my books.
Well, I'll drop some links. There will be some links, with these books after this is published. It'll probably take about, what is today? Today's Friday. I probably won't yes. publish it till Monday, but yeah, the and everybody be like, "What?" No, my podcast. I'm such a nut. But yeah, the, and I'll have those in. All your links will be in the yes. About box.
I so will thank send. You. I will actually send you the links that I have because I
oh,
have all
please
the links.
Do. So yes,
just to make life
do.
A little easier.
Yes, that will. I usually hunt them down. It takes time.
Yeah, I gotcha.
But no, I appreciate that. Thank you for taking the time to come on. And I just want to, I'm gonna do a commercial on July 22nd. I have a really, I'm so excited about this interview. Do you know who Laura Lay is? Laura Lee. She wrote.
Name.
Yes, she writes, contemporary, she writes cowboys, she writes, she is a print, traditional print author, but she started in ebooks. She wrote the Breed series, which is, with Alora's Cave in 2000 and, actually kind of changed, helped change the genre mm-hmm. Of, she took all the smexy that was hidden in the historical romance novels, right? The Bodice Rippers. And her and some other authors, some fantastic authors, ebooks started coming out and they started pushing the envelope. And that was when you first started finding werewolf books and vampire books. It was you didn't really get sexy vampires until then. And she never wrote that vampires, but she wrote the breeds were like genetically altered. Yeah. And then she put this, then the sex was explicit. It was like explicit. And she, anyway, so I'm so excited about this interview that she said, yes, you, it's her first podcast too. So I'm going to be chatting that up forever.
I would be too.
The reason it's on July 22nd is because that's my birthday.
Oh, very nice.
And she's like, when do you want to do it? And I'm like, I don't have anything else going on. So how about we just, you know.
Right?
You can give me, I mean, this, I have, you know, you've been following, how long have you been following, you know, as a writer? You've said you were talking about in high school and in college. Mm-hmm. So you've kind of been watching the writing and reading the books and watching what's out there and watching what's published. So yeah, that's how long I've been following since the companies came on. They rose to fame and then Amazon came. And Amazon came and changed the market again. But
And that's exactly it. It's Amazon came and completely changed the market entirely.
Oh, we could complain, girl, about the Amazon. But no, we're not gonna, because they still butter my bread. And
yes.
They
butter mine. It's all right. I understand. We complain in silence.
But we could complain about the Amazon.
Yeah.
But we're not gonna today. That's not this show. So thank you for coming on, and I hope you have a great day. I will make sure you get all the links to when this goes live so that you can share it out to all your followers and in your groups.
Thank you.
Have a fantastic day.
You too, my dear.
Bye.
Bye.
Fantastic. What a great conversation. I love that there is, in the writing process, there are some things that are different and some things that are absolutely the same, and how her characters show up in her life and her life shows up in her characters. That is very amazing and cool and real, because that happens to me too. Just a little bit. Don't ask me who's in my books. Don't. I don't want to get those emails. Thank you guys. The interview should explain, you know, the importance of your story. The importance of getting it done, of finishing it, of keeping with it, of telling it, of sharing it with the world. It doesn't matter if it has werewolves and vampires. Actually, I prefer it that way. I prefer it with a little bite. But there's redemption in those, and process and life in her books that so many people are going to identify with and fall in love with. And it's going to take them out of their own life and put them in this space where it helps them process and helps them understand and builds empathy and community and all those things I always talk about. So thank you so much for coming on. I really enjoyed this, Samantha. And Samantha, see, now I'm going to say your name, Samantha Saffell. I don't know if I said it right or not. You guys have a great day.